Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Engage to Flourish podcast. I'm your host, Damon, and today I'm very excited to welcome to the show Rihanna Machida. Welcome, Rihanna.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So, Rihanna, for each of our guests, we always ask the same question. What has God been highlighting to you recently? So what's God been teaching you?
Yeah, so recently God has been teaching me a lot. And I think if I were to sum up what he's been teaching me, it's that really only Jesus matters. Like at the end of the day, he is the only thing that matters. And to have like an eternal perspective. And so recently my grandfather passed away. He was 96 and he was a very faithful man. Like he was someone who I would say was a great picture of fully dedicating his life to serve the Lord.
That's awesome.
He was, yeah, like he was an elder at his church, you know, he like did youth ministry when him and my grandma were younger. And I remember he would tell me how they would like drive the youth group like minivan or van, I guess. And they would like pile in the kids, like, you know, way more than were seats and seatbelts. But just, I'm so grateful for, you know, his legacy and for the example that he set. And as I was kind of reflecting on his life and what I've learned from him, it's that at the end of the day, like only Jesus really matters. Mm-hmm. And just to kind of zoom out and have that perspective, I think sometimes it's so easy to, you know, just get overwhelmed with the ups and downs of daily life. But I think God's been reminding me to really have that eternal perspective. And yeah, my grandpa, towards the end of his life, he did have dementia, Alzheimer's, and it was actually really amazing though, because towards the end of his life, as his mind started to decline more and more, the one thing that did stay constant was like his assurance that God was good. And he would always say like, I just don't understand like how God has been so good to me. And he would always talk about how he was like ready to go home and be with the Lord. And I think he would still like randomly recite scripture all the time. And I think just, you know, we really miss him, but I think his legacy is so powerful. And he's really been teaching me as I reflect on his life, how Jesus is the only thing that really matters. And yeah, 2022 has been like kind of a hard year so far for us, for my husband, Tommy, and I, on top of losing my grandpa. Some of our Catalyst family knows that in January of this year, we went through a miscarriage and we lost our first baby. But, you know, honestly, through this season of a lot of mourning and loss, like God has been really showing me that only he matters, and that like he changes everything. And so I think I've been thinking a lot recently about, you know, it says like, oh, death, where is your sting? Like that's not just like a nice lyric or, you know, metaphor, but in these more than one way, or I guess in these two ways with losing my grandpa and losing our child, like Jesus does take away the sting. Like I do have this assurance that I will see them again, you know, because he changes everything. He completely transforms these situations that maybe would be hopeless without him into something that I could actually be hopeful despite the circumstances. And so, yeah, I really had just been learning and learning and relearning, you know, that he is the only thing that matters. And that I really pray that, like my grandpa, like at the end of my life, like at the end of my days, like it would be said of me, it would be remembered of me that like, I just really love Jesus. And, you know, that's the only one thing that really matters that I hope that my legacy is. And so, yeah, that is what the Lord has been teaching me recently.
Wow. I'm kind of speechless right now. Just, thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing. I really feel like your heart and what you had just shared is really what the theme of this whole podcast is, right? Is with Jesus, he allows us and he equips us and he empowers us to be able to flourish in every season. And, you know, even in the season where it's difficult and there's a lot of grieving, but you haven't lost hope and you're able to still see what God is doing and still be able to flourish. I really feel like that's the heart of what we want people to leave this podcast with, is to feel that with Jesus, he allows us and he equips us and he gives us the things that we need to be able to flourish in those difficult times. So yeah, that's an awesome story. So thanks, Rihanna. So really, one of the reasons that we wanted to bring on Rihanna, and we felt a kind of a sense of urgency to bring Rihanna onto the show, is because recently there was a leak from the Supreme Court that talked about potentially upcoming, and I heard actually today we're recording on a Monday. Usually I don't like talking about what day we're recording on, but we're recording on a Monday, and we're going to release it on Wednesday, this episode, but we're recording, and I heard that potentially even today, the final draft of this Supreme Court decision could come out that would overturn Roe v. Wade, which federalizes and legalizes abortion across the country. And so with that coming up, and it seems like after the leak happened, there was a lot of rhetoric on all different sides regarding the issue of abortion and what this court decision will do. And so I wanted to bring on Rihanna because she's our resident catalyst expert on this topic on abortion. And so I just wanted to bring her on so she can share a little bit with us to get a little bit of a clearer perspective on what this issue is and what we can learn that's maybe a little bit different than what we hear in the media or in the news, and we can have a better perspective on this issue as a whole. So Rihanna, can you share some wisdom with us about abortion?
Well, I'm not the resident expert, but I will say that this is something that I have always felt very passionate about. And I think, God has given me opportunities to make it personal for myself and learn more. And I had a season of my life, 5, 6, 7 maybe even, I don't even know, years ago, but I worked at a pregnancy resource center. And actually these pregnancy resource centers are a lot of the centers that are being like targeted and even vandalized right now. But through that job, I had the opportunity to sit face to face with women who were facing an abortion decision or even leaning towards an abortion decision. And I just learned so much about the abortion industry, about God's heart, about who these women really are. Like, I think there's a lot of misconception about, you know, it's just teenagers or it's reckless teenagers or it's just, you know, whoever. We saw older women. We saw even married women. Of course, we did see a lot of single or younger women. But this issue is something that, you know, affects everyone. Mm-hmm. I think it is right now such a polarized, like, feminist only affects women. Only women are allowed to have an opinion issue. However, I've really seen that it affects everyone. It affects the father of the baby. It affects the mother of the baby. It affects the whole family. Yeah, something I really have always been passionate about, I guess. So I wouldn't say I'm the expert, but more so passionate about, I guess.
Yeah, and I think that's something that I really appreciate is just your willingness to share on this topic and help other people that don't know very much or haven't had those types of experiences to be able to really understand what people are actually going through. Because I think sometimes it's easy to be against something when you're far removed from it. And so to be able to hear and understand different perspectives and to different experiences too, it's very helpful to hear. And so because you have some of those experiences, that's one of the reasons I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with us, is to help people to understand really what people are going through when they're considering making these decisions. I think one of the interesting things that recently also came out was there was a podcast that I think Steph Curry's mom was on, and she said that she was actually considering aborting Steph.
I saw that.
And she was sitting in the Planned Parenthood room at Planned Parenthood when she decided, no, I can't do this. And so today we would have missed out on Steph Curry if she had made that decision. So
yeah. And many other amazing people. And honestly, and even maybe not amazing people, right? Like, I think it's interesting because, like, I think, like, Justin Bieber, too. I might be wrong on that one. But, yeah, Steph Curry and all these people who are amazing, impact culture and whatever now. But I think, too, one of the articles I was reading made this point about that. And I really liked it because it was, like, you know, we're not grateful that Steph Curry's mom decided to choose life for him and have him because now he's this amazing NBA superstar. We're grateful because he is a human life who is worthy of living his life, even at that point, you know, whether he was going to be an NBA superstar or not.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, yeah, but I did see that and I was like, oh.
Yeah. So, okay. So with this decision that's potentially coming out of the overturning of Roe v. Wade, can we talk a little bit about like what that actually does? Because I've heard different people talking about this issue, and you know, one of the sides is saying that what this is going to do is it's going to make it so that abortion is illegal across the country if this gets overturned. So can we talk a little bit about what the actual case, the ramifications are of this whole thing?
Yeah. So I too have seen a lot of misinformation about that, that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, it will yield a ban on all abortion. And from what I understand and from what I've researched, that's just simply not true. I think there's a lot of kind of fear tactic behind that, you know, saying that this means that it will be completely banned and all of this thing. But I even saw like a, I think she's a doctor. She was making a video about how if Roe v. Wade is overturned, then even it will impact like women who are miscarrying, that they also won't be able to get the medical services that they need. Of course, that is not true because a miscarriage and an abortion are two different things. But there's a lot of misinformation. It means that it will go back to the state level. And, you know, honestly, I kind of wish that it meant that it would just be banned across the board. But that's not actually what will happen. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, it'll go back to the state level. So, you know, in my opinion, unfortunately, like in states like California, our beautiful California that we love so much, things probably won't change very much. However, it will give other states the opportunity to create laws that their residents, you know, vote for and would like to be enforced. So,
And I think that's one of the cool parts about living in the United States is that I don't think there's any other country in the world where you can have opportunity to live with people that have similar values as you in this way. So, right, this actually empowers the people of the different states to vote and create laws that are in line with their values and for people to have a voice, right? So if this was all done at the federal level, then people like us wouldn't have a voice in California. But now that it's going back to the states, people that are pro-life, that want to see babies born, now we have a voice. We can make laws. We can have that conversation with people in California, try to show the value of life and trying to get some of these laws that are currently in place or the direction that our state is currently going, we can help to change that. And it gives us back a voice.
Yeah.
And so I think that part is something that's cool. I keep almost trying to say neat, but Brandon's going to get on me for saying neat. So it's a benefit of living in the United States that we can now have a voice. The people have a voice again. And I think that's what this is really going to do. It's going to give people back their voice.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, Yeah, like even, you know, Roe v. Wade itself, like I think there's a lot of misinformation about the case and about like why it's being called into question now. And so, yeah, kind of, again, like having done my own research and everything, like some of the truth that I just wanted to share too is like, So Jane Roe, her real name is Norma McCorvey. She like never actually had an abortion. She had her baby and she gave the baby up for adoption. Later on, she's like a powerful pro-life activist and she wants Roe v. Wade to be overturned, but, she like got baptized and, you know, she's been transformed. And then also that her lawyers actually coerced her into lying and saying that she was gang raped. I think that was a big right point of the case, that this wasn't her consent to get pregnant. So therefore, you know, but that actually was not true. She was not raped, but they coerced her into saying that to make her story more heart-wrenching. Yeah, even like I think it's interesting because as I just kind of hear a lot of the propaganda and different things, like for example, like one of the like phrases, I guess you could say, that I've heard a lot is like, no uterus, no opinion, right? Like if you don't have a uterus, then you're not entitled to an opinion. But all of the Supreme Court justices who decided Roe v. Wade were men. And so, you know, there's just a lot of contradiction in, well, we need to uphold Roe v. Wade, but also if you don't have a uterus, then you're not entitled to have an opinion on this issue. And yeah, also just like that the Supreme Court in that decision like argued against like a scientific fact. And at that time, like it was and still is, but by then, you know, it was like an established scientific fact that life begins at conception. And yeah, I read this thing where the Supreme Court justices claimed that this information didn't exist when, you know, actually it did. They said, we need not resolve the difficult question of when life begins, but you know, at that time and now as well, it's an established scientific fact that life begins at conception. I found this quote that I thought was just really encouraging, I guess. A professor from the Harvard Medical School said, it is incorrect to say that biological data cannot be decisive. It is scientifically correct to say that an individual human life begins at conception. Our laws, one function of which is to help preserve the lives of our people, should be based on accurate scientific data. So I just love that because I feel like it's easy to feel sometimes, you know, like as someone who is pro-life, that, oh, I'm the minority opinion, like I'm, you know, well,
especially living in California.
Exactly. And, you know, but really that we're not, I believe that we're not. We're on the side of the truth, you know, God's truth, biblical truth, but also scientific truth. And I hope this doesn't come off the right way, but I believe even common sense, like logical thinking. And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of misinformation. But yeah, that a complete ban on abortion, it is not what overturning Roe v. Wade means will happen.
Yeah, I think sometimes we get caught up in the loud voices and the things that are shouting at us. And that determines the direction that we're going to think or we're going to move, because we want to be a part of the group, right? We don't want to be separate from the group. But I think in that way, God does call us at times to stand for his truth, where we're going to be standing against the current. And I think this is one of those issues where, especially in California, it seems like the direction is to be pro-abortion. And so I think there's certain, you know, there's key verses that stand out to me, you know, like God knew me before I was in my mother's womb, right? Like if God knows us before we were in our mother's womb, that means that there's life in that place. And who are we to take that life away? So One of the things that as we were prepping for this episode, we wanted to talk about is some of the misconceptions and some of the different rhetoric that are out there. And so we wanted to talk about how do we reconcile that? How do we know the truth? How do we understand what some of this rhetoric means? And so I wanted to kind of kick off that part of the discussion. So one of the terms that we were talking about was my body, my choice. And so Rihanna, can you help someone to understand what that is? And how do we, as pro-life, speak against that?
Yeah, that's such a popular one. I think one thing is that, you know, when they say my body, my choice, they never say my choice to do what, right? Like, it's sure, my body, my choice when it comes to certain things, but what is that choice that you actually are wanting? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think even that clarification, I think it's vague on purpose because it sounds, you know, it sounds nice. It sounds empowering. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the biggest lies, that abortion is something that empowers women. But yeah, like, it's funny. I went to Costco this morning with my dad and we saw this guy and he had like a completely tattooed, so he was bald and his whole head was tattooed black, like, it kind of looked like he was wearing a helmet, mm-hmm. all the way down to like on top of his eyebrows.
And you guys are missing out because I'm sitting here and she's using her hands to show me what it looks like. So
I've never seen anything.
Imagine Rihanna using her hands to show how these tattoos are on his head.
Yeah. And we like saw him at Costco, like pushing his cart. And like, I just like had this funny thought of like, that is like his body, his choice. Mm-hmm. Like, more power to you, man. Like, I would never do that. I hope that, you know, my husband Tommy never does that. But like, it's your body. Like, you wanted to do that. And I'm sure it was very painful, but you made this choice. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't affect me in any way, you know, other than giving me a little surprise walking mm-hmm. through Costco this morning. And, you know, cool. In that way, more power to you. But I think that when this phrase is like used to talk about abortion, it's this like overgeneralization and really just like denial of reality, of truth, of what that choice is. And, you know, it's a new life, a different person that's inside this woman's body. And so even if you think about, you know, the simplicity of like one of my best friends is like pregnant right now and they're having a son, they're having a little boy. And so I think about, you know, even the logical simplicity of like, she is a woman and she's pregnant with a boy. Mm-hmm. Clearly, that's not her body. Mm-hmm. That's not part of her body. He is his own person who has a different set of DNA, you know, half hers, half her husband's. And he is a boy and she is a woman. And just the clarity of like that is a different person. And, you know, I think oftentimes it gets kind of mixed in with this like, well, the government can't tell me what to do with my own body. But what happens when it's not your own body? You know, what happens when it's a separate person? And the truth is that there are tons of laws that regulate what I can take my body and do to another person. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't physically hurt you. I can't do this. I can't, you know.
Yeah.
All these things. And so consistently that is where I think the government and, you know, just morally, like you are able to tell someone what to do with their body when it mm-hmm. causes harm to a separate person. And of course the baby in the womb being, you know, 100% innocent and 100% vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like even more so, you know, we need to stand up and protect like those babies who literally cannot stand up and fight for themselves.
Yeah, and that's a common theme in the Bible, right? Is that God is calling his people to stand up and protect the vulnerable, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. and in this case, the unborn, they're totally vulnerable. And so I feel like God is calling us to step up and protect the unborn. And so one of the other misconceptions I feel like too is the misconception about this being an empowering choice. Mm-hmm. And I've heard you share a little bit about your experiences in talking with women by themselves, apart from, you know, a boyfriend or another figure. And as you shared, it seemed like it wasn't as empowering as it made it seem like. In some senses, having this decision on the table was a disempowering because it seemed like someone else was trying to make the choice for them. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think I really have seen it to be true through my experiences walking and, you know, sitting in front of these women, talking with them, that, it is not an empowering decision. And most, if not all, of the women that I met were really just filled with shame, I think, is like the top one that I would say. I'll never forget like one girl that came in, and she came in with her boyfriend. But because we know that very often there is like external pressure in an abortion decision, and commonly it is coming from her partner, we would have a policy of starting the consultation with just, just the woman. And then if she chose, we would invite him in for the second half. So that's what she did. So the first half, I spoke with her, and, you know, she was just very tearful and just telling me about how she really didn't want to do this, but she felt like she had no other option. She felt, desperate and trapped. But I felt like when it was just me and her, like there actually was a little bit of letting her guard down and like feeling very vulnerable. And it kind of came out that she actually was really hopeful that her boyfriend would change his mind. And if he had changed his mind, she would immediately have chosen life. So then we invited him in, and I kid you not, Damon, like as soon as he walked into the room, like her whole countenance just changed. And she was like really fearful. He was kind of like slouching in his chair, and he was like, okay, what? Like how much longer is this going to take? You know? And she was like, don't be rude. Like at least listen. And, you know, I could just see that, like, you know, I don't want to overgeneralize, like not all fathers are like this, of course, but like in this exact situation, like she didn't have the strength to say, you know, okay, well, I'm just gonna do my decision. She was really pleading that he would change his mind, and that's actually what she wanted. Mm-hmm. But she wasn't able to like go against, you know, all the pressure and all the shame that was being put on her. They left that day, and we like cried and prayed over them. I never actually was able to follow up with her. So, I just like stayed praying. And of course, there's always hope that you never quite know what the Holy Spirit is doing. I think that was a really big wake-up call for me, that a lot of these women who are facing this decision are, they themselves actually are not buying into the propaganda from the abortion industry that it's empowering, that it's easy, that it's painless, that it's not a big deal, and that they themselves are feeling the weight of the decision that they're going to make, and that they're feeling extremely like bogged down by that. I think too, like going along with the lie that abortion is powerful, there's also this lie that it's like not a big deal, that it's, abortion is healthcare, right? It's not a big deal. And unfortunately, like in my own miscarriage experience, like I actually kind of, I feel like got a glimpse of like what it's like from like a healthcare perspective. I I was in the ER at UCLA, and the doctor that I was seeing was like a resident, and so she had said, "Oh, you know, let me bring in my attending supervisor, physician, to see you. He's the family planning expert." And I kind of thought, okay, right. And so he walks in, and he has a badge on his, or a pin on his badge. It says, "Abortion is normal," in like big letters. And so, of course, my walls are kind of up, and I kind of knew, like, hey, I'm not really going to listen to like what you're telling me, because I just kind of know where you're coming from. But okay, tell me. And so he explained to me what my options were. You know, I could have a procedure, I could take a pill, or I could just wait. And I said, "What do you mean I could just wait, you know?" And he's like, "Yeah, you know, most women will like naturally pass the products of conception within like, I think he said like 6 weeks," which I was thinking, I am not waiting 6 weeks. That is crazy. But he was so incredibly flippant and so cold. And he even said to me, "Oh, you know," because I'm assuming this was wanted. And I looked at him and I said, "Yes." I'm like, "Can you not see that I'm weeping? Like, what?" But anyways, he said, "Oh, I assume, you know." And I said, "Yes." And he's, "Well, you can try again. And, you know, the best time to try again is soon. So just know that," or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of like, "I'm not there yet, and I'm kind of just trying to fit, you know." And so I had my OB, who I had trusted, you know, who had told me that she would recommend that I went ahead and have the surgery, the DNC operation, because of how far along I was like about 9.5 weeks along. And so when I had told him that, my OB, who I trusted, told me that, he goes, "Oh, why did she say that?" And I said, "Oh, she just told me that she felt it would be unsafe for me to pass because of the amount of tissue, because of how far along I was." Mm-hmm. And he goes, "Oh, well, you know, it's not a lot of tissue." Like, he goes, "It's your decision, but I wouldn't make that decision based off the amount of tissue, because it's like barely any tissue." And he goes, "It's like this much, like very little," with his fingers. And I just felt like so invalidated, you know, so small. And at the same time, though, like, I already knew what I believed. I already knew that I was going to have to advocate for myself. You know, I told him, "I don't feel comfortable with that." But I just felt like, what about these women who don't already have this like arsenal of, you know, experience and conviction that I had going into that? Like, you believe what the doctor tells you, you know, and if he's telling you this isn't a big deal and you can just be home and it'll just be like having a period and it's totally normal and it's, you know, whatever, then okay, you know. And I think it was really sad, because I think I just realized that the propaganda, the misinformation, but also just like the lies of the straight up lies of the enemy are so rampant. And that experience really gave me even more compassion for women who might find themselves in that situation. It was interesting that, you know, being someone who is already like passionate about this, that through my experience I almost did get to see like what it was like to, you know, speak to a doctor like that and everything. And he was the opposite of caring. And so
And so one last thing I thought it would be good to talk about is, you know, some of the people that are advocating for pro-abortion stance is that, you know, what about in the cases of incest, rape, you know, and those types of things that it's going to actually be more traumatic for the woman to have the baby because it's going to be a reminder of that incident. How would you respond to someone in from that case?
Yeah, so I would say that, you know, if we were to say that we would allow abortion, that it's allowable in those cases, allowable in cases of incest and rape, but not allowable in all other cases, then would that person agree with that? And, you know, more often than not, I feel like they would say, well, because from what I've seen, like the bringing up the incest and rape, like it's just this emotional tactic to excuse the whole for something that's a very, very small percentage of incidences. And so, yeah, I actually like saw this thing and it talks about, so 0.001% of abortions are due to the pregnancy resulted from an incestuous relationship. 0.065%, the woman's life was endangered by the pregnancy. 0.085%, the woman was raped. And like at least 93, if not more. Oh, and then, 6.26% social or economic reasons. And then all in total, all of these, 92.3% no reason. So it's just elective. So really the incest and the rape combined is less than 1%, far less than 1% of all abortions. So I think bringing it back to, you know, that, okay, even those aside, like, even if we were to allow for those, would you say that, you know, all others, there should be restrictions? But also just that at the end of the day, like, I truly believe no matter what the situation is, like, there exists no circumstance where that gives one person the right to end another's life on purpose. Especially that person who, again, you know, is 100% vulnerable and 100% innocent. And so really always just like bringing it back to the baby, that even in those situations, there is no situation that would justify.
Yeah, it's kind of like that old saying, right, is do two wrongs make a right?
Yeah.
Right? Using one wrong to justify another wrong.
Yeah.
So Rihanna, as we close, is there a word of encouragement that you can give to people, especially people that are maybe on the fence about this whole situation because they're hearing maybe for the first time that some of these rhetoric that they've heard in the past is, you know, maybe wrong or just different than what they've been experiencing? Can you give us a word of encouragement for the people to really recognize the life that God has given?
I would just say that, like, joining like this fight, like joining this fight for the unborn, taking a stand for life in the womb, like, it is scary, and that's okay. Like, I think, you know, acknowledging that, like, it is scary to say, okay, this is where I stand. And, you know, to be completely honest, like, I was like, who's going to listen to this? Like, like, are they going to cancel me, you know? And then I just had this thought of, like, I don't care. Like, I really don't, because I believe with all of my heart that this is the truth. Like, I believe with all of my heart that this is something that breaks God's heart and goes against, you know, his intent for us as his children. And so even if I were to, like, receive some ramifications or something, like, it would be worth it because I would be standing up for standing up for what I believe and standing up for the truth. And so
And I think that's one cool thing about when you share, I really feel kind of like in one of our recent episodes where Brett was talking about messy grace, I really feel like the way that you present it is, you know, you want to stand for the truth, but you also at the same time have grace for the people that are in that situation. You know, you are able to sympathize with them and the decisions that they have to make and not just try to shove the truth down people's throat, but really be able to show grace towards people and people that have had abortions, to be able to show grace and God's love to them in that space too, and forgiveness and those things. And I think that's been something that's been cool to hear as you've been able to share about this topic.
Yeah, yeah. I loved that part of Brett's episode. I was like, oh yeah, the truth and grace. It's such a powerful picture. But yeah, I would say like just, you know, the Bible says that the enemy came to steal, kill, and destroy. And I believe that he is the one behind this pro-abortion movement. But Jesus came to bring life, right? And life more abundantly. And that extends to the babies in the womb. That extends to any woman who maybe has had a miscarriage like myself. That extends to any woman who has had an abortion. That extends to, you know, fathers who have lost babies through miscarriage or abortion. Even, you know, doctors who have performed abortions in the past and have left and are now advocating for life in the womb. Like, you know, Jesus came to bring life and life more abundantly. And I believe that extends to all of us. And so, yeah.
Wow. What a great way to close off our show. Thanks for coming on, Rihanna, and sharing all of your insight and just helping us to discern during this time that, you know, this is actually coming back to the States. So we actually have a voice now in this fight that we didn't have before. So thanks for coming on, Rihanna.
Thank you, Damon.
So for all you listeners, until next time, may you experience God's desire for you to have life and for you to flourish in every season. Thanks for listening to the Engage to Flourish podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts. You can check out more of our content on our YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook pages by searching for Catalyst Christian Community. If you want to check out our church in person, we meet every Sunday at 10 a.m. at Stanford Middle School in Long Beach. We'd love for you to come out and experience being a part of our church family.